In 1987, a young Gleaves Whitney journeyed from his home in Colorado to graduate school at the University of Michigan, and he did so with some trepidation. His doctoral advisor, according to a friend, can be a mite prickly and doesn't suffer fools gladly. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, your host for these after-dinner scholar conversations from Wyoming Catholic College. Dr. Whitney's advisor was historian Stephen Tonsor. Tonsor, a faithful Catholic with a strong belief in truth and a decidedly conservative political philosophy, seemed out of place at the University of Michigan, where he taught for nearly 40 years. Yet his academic excellence, his high standards, and his Christian character changed the lives of many of his students, including Dr. Whitney. Dr. Gleaves Whitney is director of the Hausstein Center for Presidential Studies at Grand Valley State University in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He's a member of Wyoming Catholic College's Catholic Scholars Advisory Board, and he's our guest this week on the After Dinner Scholar. Dr. Whitney, tell us about Stephen Tonsor. Who is he, and how did he have such a great impact on your life?
Well, Stephen Tonsor was an historian at the University of Michigan for four decades. He taught there from 1954 to 1994 when he retired and shortly thereafter became emeritus. And he passed away just three and a half years ago in January of 2014. So he lived to almost 90 years of age. He had a long career. It was a very, I would say, an interesting career in that he was out of step with the mainstream academy. It's really remarkable when you think of this rather conservative, giant Catholic thinker at the University of Michigan. You know, that was a public ivy when he joined in 1954 and was hired, and he was a little out of step with the mainstream academy. Nevertheless, he found a way to thrive there and to attract a lot of graduate students. He also became a leading figure in the creation of the conservative movement. I would call him second generation. If you think of the first generation of conservatives after World War II, that would include people like Hayek and Mises and Milton Friedman, Richard Weaver at the University of Chicago, folks like that. That would be the first wave. They were writing still in the 40s and in the 50s. Russell Kirk comes to mind. Tonsor came a little bit later to the conservative movement and started writing and making an impact in that movement in the 1960s. And he's mostly known for his very sharp, I would say almost barbed and funny and interesting and sometimes sarcastic, but always highly intelligent and insightful speeches at the Philadelphia Society meetings, which started in 1964, and also through his work at the Mount Pelerin Society. And finally, his Liberty Funds and his work at the Earhart Foundation, where he dispersed lots of grants to rising stars who were not necessarily always strictly conservative, but who were just first-rate scholars who are not ideologues. So that gives you a sense of who Stephen Tonsor was. He was a historian, specifically European intellectual history. Modern European intellectual history was his academic specialty, and he regarded himself as a cultural critic and influenced cultural criticism through these conservative organizations.
Now, and he was also your dissertation advisor and mentor.
Yes, he was the mentor, the academic mentor, and a Doktorvater, as they say in Germany, because you have to add that word. He was really old school. He was somebody who, he was the master, the German professor, and the student was definitely the student. And he also was my godfather when I converted to the Catholic Church in Ann Arbor in 1990. He was my godfather, and so he was my father in two senses of the word, as a Doktorvater for the dissertation work and then for the coming into the church.
What did Dr. Tonsor mean by having a civilizational mission to confront modernity?
Well, that is a great question, because a lot of people would assume, because of his conservative bona fides and the fact that he was known as a traditionalist Catholic, although I would qualify that somewhat because I've read private letters of his that show a lot more nuance there. A lot of people would assume that he was anti-modern, and that would not be an accurate picture. I think that Stephen Tonsor believed that modernity had to be understood first, and that there was much to redeem modernity. Modernity was a very complex movement. Lasted from the Enlightenment, the first decades of the Enlightenment, which you could date going all the way back to John Locke's work in the very late 1690s, for example, all the way forward to about the 1980s. And in that period of time, many good things came out of modernity, but it was important to understand where modernity was good and where it fell really short of truly opening up the potential of the human person and truly advancing the human person's dignity and their realm of freedom in an ordered liberty. So rather than being just anti-modern, he confronted modernity as part of his civilizational mission, and he, through his teaching and through his writing, tried to give his audiences, his students, the means by which they could judge modernity. And especially as we transitioned into postmodernity, he thought, well, because of postmodernity being played on a very different game board, so to speak, we will have even more tools now to assess modernity as it recedes in time. So his cultural criticism was quite sharp. He called out other conservatives and Catholics when he thought that they were mistaken or lapsing into sort of the pabulum, the boilerplate answers. He was a very unpredictable thinker. He was a very creative and original thinker. His essays are a wonderful read. They're short. They tend to be very short. But if you go to a book, say, by my friend Greg Schneider, did an excellent edition of Stephen Tonser's essays. It's called Equality, Decadence, and Modernity. It's published by ISI Books in 2005. You get a flavor for who this man was and what his cultural criticism really consisted of in his confrontation and not always rejection of modernity.
He commented once that to hone one's mind against the gritty stone of another is the surest path to intellectual excellence. That no doubt came across in his teaching style and his whole way of approaching the academic enterprise. Could you give us some examples of that?
That was a great expression of his that he loved to tell his students and also just mention in conversation at the dinner table with other scholars and interesting people. He believed strongly in the great Western tradition of conversation. The more he could engage you in a great conversation around ideas, the happier he certainly was, and the more worthwhile he believed the conversation would be. It would be something like a Socratic dialectic in that he rarely just accepted the boilerplate simple answer, whether you were from the left or the right. You were not safe if you were a conservative Catholic with him. If you just sort of gave the party line, he would ask you, well, where does that come from? Why do you think that? Why is that a diminution of the dignity of the human person? The gravamen of the argument would always fall on you to substantiate what you were saying. And that comes from the great humanist tradition, Studio Humanitatis, that goes back to the Renaissance and even earlier, of course, with the roots of modern humanities and philology. He was very attuned to words, how to define the words, what did the words mean? How did the words, this is a historian, how did the words' meaning change over time? So the only way he could have good conversation that would challenge him, the only way I, as a student, could have good conversation that would challenge me would be to get out of the book I was reading and engage him in conversation. He loved conversation. That's why it was so much fun to work with him, because he would often take his students back home to lunch, or he would have a little dinner party where he'd have somebody interesting like Russell Kirk over, and he would invite some grad students, and we would all sit around the fire he would build and drink sherry and talk ideas. But again, it was not always just pleasant niceties of polite society. It wasn't necessarily abrasive, but there had to be something to push against. There had to be enough grit in the conversation to move the conversation forward in understanding. And if the object were truth, goodness, beauty, justice, to advance his interlocutor's to understanding those concepts, those ideas of modernity even better.
And that's certainly the kinds of conversations we hope to be having with our students here at Wyoming Catholic College, where they're...
Absolutely.
Tonser once said that we study history to discover truth. I've heard people say that about theology. I've heard of that people say that about philosophy. I'm not sure I've ever heard anyone say that about history. How did that work for him?
Well, history is part, again, of the broader studio humanitatis that goes all the way back to the ancient world that, in its more modern expression, emerges in the Renaissance. It's an attempt, really, a very broad view of the search for truth, goodness, beauty, using a lot of different, what we would call today, disciplines. But they're all united. There's a spirit of an age, usually. The modern age had its spirit in the 19-teens, say, before World War I, and then World War I shaped it, and the modern spirit emerges from World War I in a very different way. The truth is that history reveals what human beings are. Now, he certainly appreciated theory and philosophy. As a matter of fact, he was a philosophy major as an undergraduate at the University of Illinois, so he understood philosophy. He appreciated philosophers as diverse as Plato and Nietzsche. He himself was an Aristotelian, I would say. His appreciation for history in the modern age, since he was a modern European intellectual historian, was that it helped identify who we had become. We had replaced categories of being with becoming. We're not looking anymore at the sacred so much as the secular, not the transcendent, but the immanent. And he was fascinated by the transition from the absolutes of, say, a Plato and an Aristotle to a more relativistic view. That transition told you something about the human person and what the mind does when presented with a variety of evidence in the world, and using the scientific method to really undermine and shake up the old verities. So that was all part of the story of humanity, how different individuals and even how different cultures adapted modernism. Did they just adopt modernity wholesale, or did they reject parts of it? How did they confront it? How did individuals and schools and whole cultures confront modernity? This would tell you the truth of the human condition. But he, as I say, he had a philosophical background as well. This is what aided him in his study of intellectual history. And at the end of the day, he did believe that there was such a thing as truth. He was not a pure historicist or a pure relativist. He believed there was being. He believed that there were verities that could be apprehended by human reason. He did believe in revelation. And as a result, he held all of those in tension. Our history tells us that our pilgrimage on this earth is a very unfinished story. And he loved the tensions, the ironies, the paradoxes in that story. And he loved to get students to become alive to those ironies, tensions, and paradoxes that cannot just be easily papered over. And this is why he loved gritty conversation. This is why he loved pushing students in conversation, his colleagues, and he loved pushing his conservative Catholic friends and saying, don't just rely on what you think you know. You've got to earn it. He used to love an expression of Goethe's that every generation and every thoughtful person in a generation has to re-earn their tradition. You do not want traditionalism, which is the dead faith of the living, versus living tradition, which is the living faith of the dead. You have to discern, be able to discern the difference between those two. And a constant engagement with the pressures of modernity were part of that effort.
You were a blessed man to be studying with him, and may his tribe increase.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
This has been wonderful to talk to you. Thank you, Jim.
At Wyoming Catholic College, our students hone their minds against the gritty stones of their fellow students, their professors, and the great thinkers of the past. If you'd like to do some mind honing yourself, mark your calendar for this June 10th to 14th. Those are the dates for the 2018 Wyoming School of Catholic Thought here in Lander, Wyoming. The Wyoming School of Catholic Thought is an opportunity for adults to enjoy the awesome beauty of creation, the best that's been taught and said in Western civilization, and Catholic spirituality, all in a setting that encourages the mutual honing of our minds. This year's topic is the paradox of courage, desire to live, readiness to die. For more information, visit WyomingCatholic.org today. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.